ambassador to hear the chief of Columbia's Continental Staff, William L. Shirer. We take you now to Berlin.
Hello, America. Hello, CBS. This is Berlin. The sands are running fast.
And hello. This is America, where the sands are also running fast. Let's check in at the front lines of the fight to save democracy.
I have had four people ask me to have a third term, which is in a way a fourth term because the other election, the 2020 election, was totally rigged.
That is our geriatric king, president, openly looking to rig the Constitution to stay in office for an illegal third term. And this is America. I'm Rachel Bitticoffer.
And I'm Aaron Murphy. Downplay, deny, and deflect. That's been the strategy for the White House this past week. You just heard Donald Trump trying to deflect an explosive interview he gave to NBC this weekend when he said there are, quote, methods for running for a third term, and he isn't ruling out the possibility.
No person shall be elected to the office of the president more than twice. That's it. That's the exact language of the 22nd Amendment, folks. It's pretty fucking clear, okay? The problem is fascists don't care about clear constitutional language. Here we are. A lot to get to this week, Aaron, but let's start here with the third term gate.
As far as we know, there's no audio recording of Trump telling NBC's Kristen Welker that he's, quote, not joking about running for a third term. But NBC did release a transcript of the interview Sunday morning. Welker asked Trump about one possible workaround. Could Vice President Vance run for and become president in 2028? Then, once in office, could Vance give the job back to Trump? The president's answer, quote, that's one way, but there are others. Later on Air Force One, Trump tried to downplay that interview.
The Constitution limits a president to two terms. Is it your understanding that they have to be?
I don't even want to talk about it. I'm just telling you, I have had more people say, please run again. They said, we have a long way to go before we even think about that.
So, Rachel, you are a scholar of political history. What should we be looking for as Donald Trump continues to say things like this? Can we do anything about it?
Nope, there's not much that we can do about it. But I have to tell you, this logic of a third term is coming from our constitutional legal eagles that were behind, you know, such novel law theories like not having to certify the Electoral College vote. And I imagine what they'll harp down in is trying to insert consecutive, right? So you can't be elected more than twice consecutively, right? But that language does not exist. And, we got to see how the courts hold up to this.
Well, you called it last week. The Signalgate scandal is a huge one and one of the few stories so far that has stayed in the news cycle all week long. It's also been a case study in how this administration downplays and deflects scandals and denies objective facts. For some in MAGA, accidentally including a journalist on a text thread to discuss top secret war plans that put U.S. troops in harm's way is just no big deal or an accident. That's downplay. For others, it was deny. They're trying to say it's all fake news or that the journalist, Atlantic editor Jeffrey Goldberg, is biased and not credible, or that getting added to the thread was somehow his fault. But have no fear, America. Despite calls for his resignation, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth says,
I know exactly what I'm doing, exactly what we're directing, and I'm really proud of what we accomplished.
Oh, that's Whiskey Pete for ya. The scandals are coming down hard and so fast, I feel like I'm watching people on crack play tennis. Despite several congressional hearings, top story coverage, and a whole bunch of late-night jokes, nobody seems to be getting in trouble for this. On social media Sunday, Trump tried to deflect, calling news coverage of his scandal old and boring. The question for the rest of us is he right? I mean, you know, we'll see. It's hard to focus on anything when it's coming at you in Bannon's flood the zone strategy. And there are some other huge stories this week.
Yeah, that'd be the Trump tax, 25% tariffs on foreign goods, including pharmaceuticals, all foreign-made cars, foreign car parts, that's almost everything, going into effect Wednesday.
Yeah, that's why I did those repairs. You can't make this shit up. The White House, I'm not even kidding, dude. They're calling the Trump Tax Day Liberation Day. It's like the Trump tax is liberating you of your money.
And the value of your stock portfolio. Wall Street isn't buying it. I got to tell you, I had getting a new used car in my budget this year, and I moved up my timeline. I went to the dealership over the weekend, and the salesman told me the Trump tax will jack up all car prices. He said used and new, foreign and domestic, doesn't matter. He said, and this is a direct quote, it's going to be like COVID all over again for car buyers.
Yeah, the Trump tax is a spin of the roulette wheel, and the House always wins, folks. Trump himself just simply refuses to accept the fact that higher consumer prices will hurt the economy.
Remember, there are no tariffs. All you have to do is do your work right here. If you have your company here, if you build your product, make your car or whatever it is you're making, no tariffs.
Higher prices now, his argument goes, will ultimately push companies to bring manufacturing back to this country. But that's not how the global economy works, dude. Like it or not, almost everything you own is made up of parts and pieces from a global supply chain. As for the working class, remember, Trump is trying to do all of this as the entire Republican Party wages war on healthcare, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, public education, scientific research. Hell, they're even coming for Meals on Wheels, okay? The federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. And I didn't even get you one of my Starbucks drinks, guys. Listen, what Trump's tariff plan does is it steals from Peter to pay Paul, but you are both Peter and Paul.
That's a good way to put it. Speaking of the entire Republican Party, trouble in the tea leaves, Rachel. Let's talk about Representative Elise Stefanik for a sec. Stefanik represents New York's 21st Congressional District, and she was nominated by Trump to serve as ambassador to the United Nations. But Trump pulled her nomination because the R's don't have the luxury of giving up a House seat these days.
Yeah, I mean, if Stefanik left the House, that's a safe red district, and they can't be sure, Aaron, that they're going to carry it. I mean, let that sink in. They have no votes to spare in the House. The margin is so narrow. Two of the vacancies belong to Dems. You know, the data that they have for that Florida special election, it must have been terrifying.
There's a headline in The Intercept that sent chills down my spine. It says, in Trump's America, you can be disappeared for writing an op-ed. This is a story worth keeping an eye on because it ain't over yet. It's about a Turkish PhD student at Tufts University in Boston. Her name is Rumeysa Öztürk. Masked, plainclothes federal agents approached Öztürk on the street, handcuffed her and whisked her away in broad daylight, then flew her down to Louisiana. The video is chilling. The government cited an op-ed Öztürk co-wrote last year in the student newspaper at Tufts. The op-ed asks Tufts to divest from companies with ties to Israel. But here's the rub. That's not the reason Secretary of State Marco Rubio cited when talking about this arrest.
If you apply for a visa to enter the United States and be a student, and you tell us that the reason why you're coming to the United States is not just because you want to write op-eds, but because you want to participate in movements that are involved in doing things like vandalizing universities, harassing students, taking over buildings, creating a ruckus, we're not going to give you a visa. If you lie to us and get a visa and then enter the United States and with that visa participate in that sort of activity, we're going to take away your visa.
There is no evidence that Rumeysa Öztürk participated in any vandalism or harassment or taking over buildings or causing a ruckus. She hasn't even been charged. Look, wherever you stand on the debate over Israel and Gaza, it's beside the point. The point is facts don't matter in Trump 2.0. The administration says if you have a political opinion, you better get in line.
Yeah, and you know, listen, I mean, those of you guys that are listening to us weekly and following me on Twitter and the cycle, you know, I've been very vocal about the fuck around and found out part of what's facing the American Muslim community, that the Trump administration had put on their website months before the election that they intended to do exactly what they're doing now. And, you know, here's the thing. I'm not a heartless asshole. So, like, I posted that video and I feel terrible for these people. I don't have enough hatred in my heart to be happy when I see people just getting disappeared. But I just have to point out, like, this is the reality that we helped buy when we didn't, you know, reelect a Democrat to the White House. And, you know, it really goes to show there are a difference between the two parties.
And now an update from last week's show when we mentioned that Second Lady Usha Vance would be visiting Greenland. And now she was excited to see a dog sled race and all that other PR bullshit. Man, things got icy pretty quick.
Bada boom. I see what you did there, Aaron.
J.D. Vance eventually decided to tag along on the trip to Greenland as Trump continues talking about annexing the entire island somehow. But the nation of Greenland had none of it. Greenlanders planned mass protests to the point that Vance had to scale down the whole visit to an awkward three-hour meeting at a remote American Space Force base on the northern part of the island. and that's where he picked a fight with one of our closest allies.
There is no amount of bullying, no amount of obfuscating, no amount of confusing the issue. Our message to Denmark is very simple. You have not done a good job by the people of Greenland. You have underinvested in the people of Greenland, and you have underinvested in the security architecture of this incredible, beautiful landmass filled with incredible people. That has to change. And because it hasn't changed, this is why President Trump's policy in Greenland is what it is.
As you can imagine, this all smells pretty rotten in the state of Denmark.
I have a message for our American friends.
Here's Denmark's foreign minister firing back.
Of course, we are open to criticism, but let me be completely honest. We do not appreciate the tone in which it's being delivered. This is not how you speak to your close allies.
The state of Denmark, huh? Those who are educated might recognize that as a Shakespeare quote. Now, I didn't, guys, because I'm only nerd adjacent. So when I pointed out that Denmark wasn't a state, and Aaron was like, it's a Shakespeare quote. And I was like, oh. Fuck, I'm a woman of the people, Aaron, okay? The illiterate people that watch Deadliest Catch in football, you know?
That's where politics lives. Alas, poor Rachel.
Okay, look, I want to turn to what happens later today. It's Tuesday, and that means it's time for some very special elections. I've been waiting a long time for these, okay? We have a few things we're going to be watching Tuesday, but the first and most important one is the Wisconsin State Supreme Court race. Elon is so desperate to win, he's out there dropping checks left and right.
Let me first hand out two $1 million checks in appreciation.
That's right. At a town hall in Green Bay over the weekend, Elon gave two $1 million checks, those big cheesy prop checks, but they're actual money, to two people who had already voted. Don't buy the, oh, I'm just giving money away in appreciation BS. It's buying votes, pure and simple, for the conservative candidate in Wisconsin, Judge Brad Schimmel.
So the first check goes to Nicholas Jacobs.
Wisconsin's Democratic Attorney General sued to prevent these cash giveaways. Still, it's happening.
You know, the reason for the checks is that it's really just to get attention. It's like we need to get attention, and it's somewhat inevitably when I do these things, it causes the legacy media to like kind of lose their minds, and then they'll run it on every news channel. And I'm like, I couldn't pay them it would cost like 10 times more, or, you know, to get the kind of coverage that we get. So
far, Musk and friends have spent about $20 million in support of Brad Schimmel in this little Supreme Court race in Wisconsin. We have the best democracy money can buy, don't we?
We do. And every time someone mentions it to me, Aaron, I'm reminded of the 2016 presidential election and the alternative reality we'd be living in right now if only you motherfuckers would have voted for Hillary Clinton. Aaron, did you know that if the email lady had won in 2016, the Supreme Court would have had its first liberal majority since the 1960s?
Yeah, I hate this timeline.
Yeah, we could have used that majority to kill off Citizens United and partisan gerrymandering. And instead of being at its deathbed, American democracy would be in the middle of a renaissance. But as they say, there's no point crying about spilled democracy.
With the court's majority up for grabs, the Wisconsin Supreme Court race is closing out the most expensive judicial race in the history of this country by far. As a reminder, Schimmel's the conservative candidate. He's running against liberal candidate Judge Susan Crawford. That matters because it'll decide whether Wisconsin Supreme Court is MAGA or part of the real world. And that matters because this swing state election will either be a momentum boost for Trump 2.0 or a big uh-oh.
Yeah, Elon is big mad at Wisconsin because they won't let him sell his Teslas there. Look, I want to draw attention to Ben Wickler's strategy for the race. Again, Ben Wickler is the chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. He did run for DNC chair. I'm probably the happiest motherfucker in the world that he's still in Wisconsin because I just don't trust Wisconsin with anyone but Ben, and is such an important state for so many reasons. But yeah, his strategy has been the people versus Elon Musk. And it's a multi-platform strategy. Been using TV ads, billboards. They're doing town halls where citizens are invited to air their grievances about the world's billionaires stealing all their shit. just a great strategy. Elon is the most hated man in America. And even people who like Trump hate Elon. So center your message around Elon crushing programs like Meals on Wheels, and definitely wedge Elon and Social Security and Medicare.
Wisconsin is not the only game in town. We also have a couple of special elections and deep red House seats in Florida to fill vacant seats. This is an important moment, folks. It's easy to see why they panicked and pulled Elise Stefanik's nomination and threw her back into the House.
That's Florida. And yeah, I want to be clear about what Republicans are seeing in the data that provoked them to pull her nomination. These districts that they're working to defend down there, those are Trump plus 30 districts, folks. Okay? That means Trump beat Biden in that district in 2024 by 30 fucking points. So I want to be clear as to what constitutes a bad day for the GOP. Losing the Wisconsin State Supreme Court race and basically any W, 10 points, 15 points less in a R plus 30 district is a shit day for them, because it means that if it was a swing race, they would get buried.
You heard it from the doc, gang. Rachel, can you tell us what to expect if the Democrats have a good day?
Yeah, I don't mind if I do. There's already a panic among swing race Republicans about Elon Musk and Doge, okay? They're, for all the talk about Democrats in disarray, the Republican Party is rupturing from within right now. I saw an Axios article with a White House staffer saying, you know, look, if we slash healthcare for poor people to pay for tax cuts for billionaires, we are fucked. And he's right. Okay. He's absolutely right. They absolutely panicked last week when the DCCC put up billboards in a few vulnerable House incumbent districts alleging that they were going to cut Medicaid. Okay. They came after the billboard company and pressured them to bring it down with the whole thing. But, you know, once you vote for one of these budgets to give permission to cut $1 trillion out of the budget, you know that fat's coming out of Medicaid. So as I said, Elon is the wedge. Wedge the hell out of Elon and Social Security and Doge and Medicare. At some point, Elon is going to become the fall guy. Nobody voted for this guy, okay? And they know it. And that line is so fucking powerful. It's pushing us further down that path that we need to get down when Trump and Elon finally come to blows. Because eventually, Elon is going to become so toxic, Trump's going to look to jettison him. And as we've discussed before, there's only one person in the whole fucking world other than Vladimir Putin who owns Trump, and that is Elon Musk.
Rachel, who do you think will go first between Marco Rubio, Elon Musk, and J.D. Vance?
I think it will be Musk, definitely. And, you know, the thing with Trump is how can he do that delicately without weaponizing Elon against him? Now, it's possible Elon will just go slunk off, right? He seems like a petty little bitch to me, doesn't he, Aaron?
Yes.
Okay, so I mean, he's got a megaphone to 220 million people every tweet. And that's, you know, not only does he have deep pockets to fuck with anybody that screws with him, he's got that megaphone. Trump knows it. It's the one thing he's subservient about, I would think, in the situation.
Yeah.
It's got to drive him fucking nuts, right? And so, yeah, you can't possibly wedge Elon enough.
Details shared on Signal, and how did you learn that a journalist was privy to the targets, the types of weapons used?
I've heard I was characterized. Nobody was texting war plans, and that's all I have to say about that.
Nobody was texting war plans? If you're going to include a world-class journalist on your text thread, here's a tip. Assume the journalist saves all the receipts. Here's a transcript of that text thread, which Jeffrey Goldberg published in full at 11:44 a.m. Eastern Time. Hegseth posted, all caps, quote, team update. Time now, 11:44 Eastern. Weather is favorable. Just confirmed with CENTCOM. We are a go for mission launch. Then 12:15 Eastern, F-18s launch, first strike package. 13:45, trigger-based F-18 first strike window starts. Target terrorist is at his known location, so should be on time. Also, strike drones launch MQ-9s. You can spin it to the dumb people all you want, Mr. Secretary, but for the rest of America, these are war plans.
I'm not an expert. That sounds like a lot of sources and methods to me, okay? But there's no rest for the wicked, so we have to move on. There's other shit to talk about. Okay, I want to spend this last part of the show talking about some data I put out over the weekend that comes from David Shore's What Happened Tour last week. Now, for those of you who don't remember, David Shore comes from Blue Rose Research, which helped message us into this apocalypse. But he's got some good data, and he took an Abimer tour.
And let me butt in for a quick assignment. Feel free to hit pause and pull up Rachel's latest analysis from The Cycle on Substack.com. It's called Stat of the Week. Voters have no idea what Democrats stand for. It is worth a read, but Rachel, walk us through the key takeaways.
Okay, so what this data is, it's showing the results of two separate survey questions that were asked in their data set. One asked voters which party, Republicans or Democrats, they trust more on a range of issues, okay? And that's the variable I want to focus on here, because the results are stunning. And here's the thing about Shore. I mean, he's great at the data, but the theory, you know, he didn't even notice this at all. But what if I was to tell you that respondents were just as likely to trust Republicans as they are Democrats when it comes to student loans?
Wait, student loans? Didn't Biden just forgive like $200 billion in student loans?
Why, yes, Aaron. Yes, he did. And yet our tuned out electorate missed that memo, okay? So it's literally 50-50, and so are some other things, okay? Voting rights, education, healthcare, Medicare, Social Security, okay? Respondents don't know if they should trust us or Republicans on fucking Medicare, guys. In fact, I didn't mention this in the write-up yesterday, so you're all getting an extra here, okay? And there is one issue on this graph that very clearly voters associate entirely with Democrats and strongly. And do you want to guess what that one issue is, Aaron?
Well, I know it because I read the article.
See, I was checking on you. The professor always finds out when students skip the reading. You know, they want to show up prepared. Okay, that one thing that we're famous for, guys, is LGBTQ issues. Okay, now look. As I pointed out over the months, especially post-election, when I showed you that graph that shows how over the course of four decades, our brand of stands for the working class has collapsed. And that at the same time, our brand of stands with marginalized groups has skyrocketed, okay? So what we're seeing here, the one thing voters know about us that they're like strongly sure that we stand for is gay rights, okay? And again, that's great as a human being, but as a party that needs to build a coalition, that means our brand has been well-defined on that issue, and we don't need to continue to define on it.
Right, especially if the electorate does not trust us on something as basic as Social Security and Medicare.
Exactly, because the oxygen that we've bled out on that stuff, it's got to change now to defining us as the party for the working class.
And how do we do it? Who's doing it? What do they need help with from us, the people?
I mean, right now, you just got to keep pressuring people to make change. I mean, like there are a lot of us pushing to make change. In fact, I was on Twitter earlier today. Max Burns, who's a Democratic strategist, he also has, you've probably seen him on some things like on MSNBC. But anyway, he was posting about how he has data that shows, you know, that people want Democrats to fight. They're tired of the both parties, you know, weak shit. The compromise messaging doesn't just fall flat in testing. It actually turns off Democrats and independents, as we talk about the apologetic Democratic model in the book, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, even when you show the Democrats that people want populism and fight, they want angry moderates. And the theme is these motherfuckers are stealing your money. They're stealing your retirement. They're stealing your health care, right? And, you know, it's frustrating that we still don't have consensus on that. But a lot of that hinges from the fact that we have six or seven different entities in the Democratic ecosystem and no central brain trust. And of course, I continue to work on that every day.
Before we started recording, Rachel, we were talking about the issue of transgender rights and which bathrooms to use. And although personally, I find that to be a very important issue, it is not the issue that I would put on a list of 1,000 things that I think are more important. So it is an extreme price that we paid in order to get that fight, and we lost it. And look where we are.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, extremism is a two-party problem, right? But the problem is in the Republican Party, the extremists had Tea Party Rebellion. They took over the party. Over the years, that's morphed into the Freedom Caucus, whatever the hell it is, nightmare that we're all living under, right? But in the Democratic Party, we still have extremism. We just don't, it's not controlling the party. But, you know, in places where they have uniparty, I mean, Alabama's a shithole because Republicans have no need to govern for the vast population. And unfortunately, Democrats do that same thing in some blue states. And it has created, you know, Kamala Harris having the baggage of having supported taxpayer-funded sex changes. And if that sounds like something that's, you know, important to you, great. It's not about you. It's about the other 80% of people who don't have that kind of predisposition and empathy, okay? And the fact that that can be weaponized against the entire party and used to tear us down. So extremism anywhere is bad. I think California, Oregon, and Washington have all figured out that, you know, one party rule has its detriments no matter which side is doing it. That's going to bring us to the end of this week's show, guys. Follow along with me in real time at Twitter and at Blue Sky. It's at Rachel Bitticoffer. I post, obviously, weekly content on The Cycle. Great analysis there. You can find that at thecycle@substack.com.
Thank you, listeners. Thank you, subscribers. And a big thank you to our paid subscribers on Substack. Rachel and I wrote Hit 'em Where It Hurts, How to Save Democracy by Beating Republicans at Their Own Game. More at hit'emwhereithurts.com. How are we going to close this show out, Rachel?
Oh, do we have a closer for you? French courts have banned fascist leader Marine Le Pen from running for office for 5 years. And they sentenced her to 4 years in prison. She gets 2 years of time served for an egregious embezzlement scam. It just smacks of like Trump's flagrant criminality where they do it so badly. Is like, you know, they don't obviously even worry about being prosecuted, but not in France, folks, not so fast.
And she was due to be a major challenger in the presidential election in 2027. Now, the court has ruled that she cannot stand in that election and any other elections over the next 5 years.
You know, in France, at least, no one is above the law. I think you might need to say country of Get Denmark.
That's a reference to Shakespeare, my friend. Something's rotten in the state of Denmark.
Ah! Yes. Well, I'm fucking illiterate,
it's okay.
Dude.
Okay, it's for those high-minded, you know, intellectuals.
Oh, yeah, I was never in that club.